was recently asked how long the field of financial therapy has been around, and my response was, look, behavioral finance and the psychology of money has been around for a very long time. It's just within the past 10 to 15 years that people in the field of psychology have said, maybe we should take all of this stuff that people are using to trick people into spending more money and actually empower consumers and individuals so they can learn how they're being tricked and stop spending so much money on things that they might not even want or need. If you're new here, what's up? My name is Lindsay. I'm a financial therapist and I leave shame at the door. So don't worry, this channel and this podcast are not meant to make you feel bad about spending money. In fact, I'm really here to help you understand the way that emotions and psychology and our systems all intersect. I cannot unsee an old tweet that TikTok is basically our generation's home shopping network, or HSN. And it's really true. From hauls, talking about what people bought at big box stores, to thrifting, it doesn't matter. Shopping is everywhere. And I want to talk about some of the new consumerism tricks that you might not be as aware of that are taking money from you that you don't actually want to be spending. Again, this is not about shaming you if you are a shopper and you have the means to shop and spend money in that way. This is really about making sure that you're aware of why you're spending the way that you're spending and just kind of holding a mirror or shining a light on some of the different tricks of the trade that these marketing gurus are doing to get you to spend your hard-earned cash on things that you might not really want or need. Let's start with a little definition. The Diderot effect is this idea that when you buy something new, it can kick off you needing to buy other things to support that thing that you bought. It leads you to craving more and desiring more and wanting to acquire more stuff, which your former self, before you bought this particular thing, didn't want or need in order to make you happy. I'll give you a personal example. I recently bought two new non-stick, non-toxic pans. Actually, one was a pot and one was a pan. And I was so excited to have these things. And truly, I did need to upgrade them. My old ones were scraping and flaking and not really non-stick anymore. And it was really important to me that when I replaced these new ones, that they were non-toxic as well as non-stick. But not only did I have to buy that pot and that pan, I then had to get new things to take care of these new pots and pans. I had to get scratch-free utensils, and I had to make sure that I was getting gentle dish soap in order to support these new pots and pans. But we've all done things like this. Let's say you started a new yoga habit and you're like, ooh, I really need a new yoga mat. And you might have. But once you get that new yoga mat and you're in class, you're all of a sudden kind of looking around at your peers and you're like, ooh, I need a shoulder strap to carry my new yoga mat, and I actually need a yoga towel. And actually, that water bottle that I had is looking a little dingy and tired, and I kind of want to upgrade to a new insulated water bottle. And ooh, I actually need a new outfit too, right? It spirals out of control when there is a thing that we might need or might want. It kicks off this spiral of shopping. So I want to just name that that is a thing that happens, not to shame you again, but just to put light to it and help you to understand this type of effect, because marketers are well aware of this. That's why when you go to add a new yoga mat to your online shopping cart, it almost always prompts for $13.99. Would you like to add this yoga block as well? Or when you go onto the website that everybody hates, but we all use anyway, and you go to purchase a book, they tell you, shoppers who bought this book also bought this book. Wouldn't you like to add it to your bundle? Right, that is the Diderot effect happening with full force. It's not just you going out and thinking, ooh, I need this new thing. These marketers have also figured out that they can use this effect before you even check out of your online shopping cart by pre-populating your cart or your screen with the things that they think you might need, because they're banking on this effect really taking hold and working. Prior to the shift of shopping mostly online for things, the way that marketers would trick us into spending more money were by literally placing items in the store at desirable places, whether it's an end cap or a front end rack. Those are specifically placed in order to get you to add things to your literal shopping cart that you might not have wanted or needed. An end cap is the end of a shopping aisle that usually has some sort of theme and some additional signage or branding to draw your eyes clients and draw your attention to that particular product. For example, an end cap might include things like tortilla chips and jarred salsa to tell you, ooh, this is going to be a great snack for this weekend, chips and salsa. Meanwhile, a front end rack is the rack that is right at the checkout counter that includes those little easy to add to your physical cart purchases like chocolates, mints, gum, or magazines. And you might be aware of the way that stores are set up, so you might have trained yourself if you know you're going in and you need to buy replacement tank tops at this particular store, you might tell yourself, okay, when I get to checkout, I'm not gonna look at anything that's like at my waistline. I don't need chapstick or I don't need travel lotion or hand sanitizer or whatever the last minute thing might be. But when it comes to those online shopping carts, you might not be paying as much attention. According to the USA Today, back in 2019, I imagine these numbers have gone up, the average American consumer spends about $400 a month on what they consider to be impulse purchases. Things like subscription services, takeout, or mentioning that Diderot effect on these little things that we just want to add as well. The other big bucket of ways that we are being tricked as consumers is all of the different washing of items to make it feel like you're doing something good when you spend your money. Washing is not about cleaning things or sanitizing things. Basically, it's this idea that stores or brands are trying to appeal to millennial and Gen Z's tender hearts and are trying to ally themselves with the younger generation's conscientiousness, because research shows that millennials and Gen Zers are much more likely to say that they are going to spend more money on companies that are values aligned with them. So thus, the term washing has come about to point out that not every single brand is actually engaging in the values that they are espousing. Rather, they are really using it as marketing. So the way that washing and spending show up together is that you might be overspending on ethical brands that might not actually be fully doing the thing that they're saying that they're doing. And this is not me trying to shade companies. I think a lot of companies have good missions at heart, or maybe even started some of these buy one, give one programs from a good place. But unfortunately, they don't always shake out the way that they intend. For example, there is a popular brand that was started in the aughts that became very popular that was all about buying a pair of shoes. And when you bought a pair of shoes, the company would donate a pair of shoes to a country or a region deemed, quote unquote, in need. But unfortunately, while that might have sounded good at face value, what actually ended up happening in a lot of those situations is by donating all of those shoes to these in-need areas, they actually took away some of the organic and natural ways that people in those places had met that need. For example, there had been these kind of industries that were created by going to thrift stores or getting donated shoes, fixing them up, and then charging a small markup to other community members. And when this big shoe company came in and just dropped a bunch of free shoes off, it actually disrupted those local artisan makers and refurbishers. I'm not saying if you're gonna buy shoes, buy the most unethical, unsustainable ones that you can find. I just want you to check in and ask yourself, am I buying these shoes because they're comfortable, I need them, and they are going to be used, and I'd rather have the money that I was going to spend go toward a sustainable or a somewhat more ethical brand than one of those brands that doesn't talk about how they keep their waste out of landfills or doesn't address that they are using labor that is less than savory to make their shoes? No, definitely put your money toward the places that you are more values aligned with, but don't spend more money than you were planning just because you feel like it's sustainable or ethical to do so. The way that this washing of things has also trickled out into consumerism and marketers getting you to spend your money is on things like Hygge washing. Hygge, H-Y-G-G-E, is a Danish term that is not easily translatable, but it's basically this idea of staying cozy and staying inside, being with loved ones, lighting candles, drinking warm drinks out of mugs. But there will be stores or brands that will market a hygge section full of blankets and mugs and candles, when in reality, you don't need a hygge blanket to practice hygge. You just need a blanket. Do you get what I mean? This also happens every single summer in the month of June when it's Pride Month. All of a sudden, companies who might not have been advocating for LGBTQIA inclusion and equality, all of a sudden they've got t-shirts with rainbow hearts on them, or they've got socks that include the pride flag. These are things meant to tug on your little heartstrings and make you hand over your money to these companies that might not otherwise participate in actual meaningful measures of advocating for LGBTQIA inclusion. They just like to capitalize on that month and sell you goods and make you feel good about spending your money in that way. Minimalism washing, I have seen show up all over the place. Things like getting a new capsule wardrobe every single season. If you don't know what a capsule wardrobe is, it's basically this concept that you only need 25 or 30 pieces in your wardrobe at any given time for any given season to create a comprehensive, sustainable, and minimalist wardrobe that also reduces the mental load of choosing an outfit and getting dressed. For example, a pair of pants will go with 5 different tops or blouses, or an accessory can be worn multiple different ways and woven into different outfits. The idea is to reduce the amount of money that you spend, reduce the amount of mental labor exerted to create an outfit, and kind of pare down on the amount of stuff that you have in your wardrobe. I'm in Anishinaabe land, also known as Michigan, which means I have 4 seasons. If I really engaged in buying a brand new wardrobe to create a capsule wardrobe every single season, that would mean I'm buying 30 new pieces every fall, winter, spring, and summer, versus actually looking at my wardrobe, maybe intentionally buying 2 or 3 pieces to kind of plug a hole and actually create a capsule wardrobe. There are companies out there that are now basically packaging up a wardrobe and saying, here's your capsule wardrobe. This is all you need for the next 3 months, when in reality, that's kind of the opposite of the purpose of a capsule wardrobe in the first place. I have also seen minimalism washing show up in big box stores where they kind of sell a curated minimalist living room or minimalist kitchen, and they have all of the things that you need to buy to become a minimalist. Again, kind of the opposite purpose of being a minimalist. Being a minimalist is really about using less, paring down, and being really intentional about the things that are in your house and making sure that they fall into either being beautiful, useful, or ideally with good minimalist design, they're both. Instead of falling into hygge washing, green washing, pink washing, or minimalism washing, actually ask yourself, what are the things that you need? Actually, I'm wearing a sweatshirt right now that is made out of a more high quality fabric than your generic cotton. And I'm more than happy to spend a little bit more on something like this that I'm going to use again and again, that isn't going to fall apart in the wash after 3 to 5 washes. That makes a lot of sense to me. But spending money on something like this because it's green doesn't always make sense. So just be a little bit intentional. If you're buying into the idea that you need to buy things to be a minimalist or to have a capsule wardrobe, you're missing the point, and the marketers are winning, and these consumerism tricks are working on you. Instead, here are some things to think about if you find yourself spending money because you're doing a good thing for these big corporations. Spend locally. When you spend within your community, research shows that for every dollar you spend in your community, between 80 and 83 cents of that dollar, or between 80 and 83% of the amount of money that you spend, actually stays in your community. So if you need a new pair of shoes, instead of going to Google and typing in whatever shoes you need, head to your local shoe store that is locally owned, try on a few pairs, and choose the pair of shoes that best fits your needs and your budget in keeping those dollars in your community. That's a much better way to actually practice being economically sustainable and spending your money in alignment with your values. When it comes to creating a minimalist wardrobe or capsule wardrobe, I love doing things like thrifting or using online thrift stores. I personally have had a lot of luck shopping through Rent the Runway and also shopping through ThredUp. Those are both online pre-owned clothing stores. That tends to be better for me than going into the thrift stores, but some people love the hunt of going into a thrift store and getting those handful of pieces that they need to create a well-rounded capsule wardrobe. A trick when it comes to minimalism and preventing yourself from falling into shopping in order to be a minimalist comes from, no surprise, the duo The Minimalists. One of the challenges they extend to folks who are curious about minimalism and really want to practice minimalism is something called a packing party. A packing party is where you pack up your belongings as though you were moving. So all of your clothes go into a box or into a bag or into those giant plastic Tupperware things. All of your kitchen gets packed up like you're moving. And they say to only take out the things from those boxes that you actually use in the course of 30 days. They have found that for most people who engage in these packing parties, between 50 and 80% of the stuff that they have in those boxes never gets touched during those 30 days. The next challenge from there is to take those boxes of the things that you haven't touched and either move them to a garage or a basement or into a closet and to keep pushing out that timeline to practice minimalism and see of the crap that you have in those boxes, how much of it are you actually using? And everybody is different. Some people like to have a more generous timeline when they're starting with minimalism and they're trying out a packing party challenge and they say, if I haven't touched anything in 6 months, then I'll go ahead and donate or sell the things that I haven't used. Other people would like a full year just to know that their stuff is there before they go and donate or sell those things. But that's a really great challenge if you're actually interested in practicing minimalism and not engaging in consumerism to have the latest gadget or piece of clothing or whatever your vice may be when it comes to spending, is to try one of those packing challenges. I hope that shining a light on the way that these big companies and marketing teams have used the Dedro effect to your detriment can help you to take ownership over the things that you're spending your money on so you're not falling into those consumerism traps. I am not anti-shopping here, but I am about making sure that when you're spending your discretionary money, that you are doing it with intentionality in a way that feels good for you. And if you knew some of those older marketing tricks that were designed to get you to spend more money, I hope that learning about some of these new marketing tricks can help you to be a little bit more aware the next time you're ready to spend some of your discretionary money on the things that I mentioned here. Thanks so much for listening. Your support of this podcast means the absolute world. If you love listening, I would love if you could help me out by quickly rating and reviewing this podcast on the podcast player you're using right now. This quick but meaningful action helps to support the show and it helps others find it too. I absolutely love connecting with my listeners. So if something resonated from today's episode, take a screenshot of the episode, share it out on your stories, and be sure to tag me on Instagram at mindmoneybalance. This podcast simply wouldn't be possible without the help of others. Thank you to RJ Basillo for masterfully editing this podcast, to Liberty Sales, who creatively and brilliantly helps market the show to help those who need it find it by leveraging her public health communication skills. And thank you to Leslie Tagorda and Jeffrey Campanero of Star Powered, who've infused their creative genius into the cover and episode art with the unique magic of the Astro Brand astrology-based branding process. Disclaimer. Everything shared on this podcast is for entertainment purposes only. Neither the host nor the guests are providing legal, financial, accounting, mental health, investing, medical, or any other professional advice. If you are seeking professional help, please find it. See you next time.